In our Hawaii Garden and Forest segment, we take you out on the grounds of Bishop Museum at Kapalama. Now, the Hawaii Tourism Authority is helping to fund programs that are helping to keep the Hawaii Biological Survey up to date. Now, that's really an inventory of plants found across the state. And as part of the outreach, museum staff are restarting tours of the native gardens on the Kapalama campus that were planted almost a decade ago. We went along on last month's inaugural tour led by research specialist Clyde Imada, who's been at the museum for 35 years.
This is the sand dune area. It's covered over there. So there's been an evolution over time of this garden. But the intent was to showcase some of the plants that would grow in a habitat like this. This area, Kalihi, is a hot, dry place. Windy, rocky. In fact, these buildings were built from rock that was mined right here on the ground. All of this is basalt that was mined from this rocky habitat right here, that building too. So you can see how hot and dry and rocky it must have been. So the plants that were planted were ideally plants that would survive on their own in this kind of habitat. And over the years, there's been a number of casualties. They just proved that they cannot grow in this kind of habitat. And so we just said, okay, thank you. We won't plant you anymore.
And we sat down with Clyde Imada and the Botany Department's collections manager, Barb Kennedy, to dig down on the rich resource at the museum.
We have a herbarium with the largest Hawaiian collection in the world. We have over 700,000 plant records, Hawaiian and Pacific focused.
Now, we were just out in the collections area, and you had a whole table full of wonderful specimens that have been preserved for eons. Is that right?
That's correct. We have the oldest Hawaiian collections here at the museum are from Captain Cook's third voyage. So they were brought back to Britain, and we got the duplicate specimens from British Museum. So for us, that's gold. In Britain, they had people exploring all over the world on those voyages, bringing specimens back. So the Hawaiian specimens for them was just another voyage, but gold for Hawaii.
And so a lot of folks maybe don't realize the treasures that you have hidden here, because only a certain portion of it gets on exhibit or on display at any one time.
No, I hear that all the time. I go to the doctor's office or friends that I know, they will tell me they had no idea the extent of the natural history collections that we have at Bishop Museum. And we are a go-to herbarium. We have researchers that come here from all over the world and work on things like East Polynesian flora, flora of Samoa. We have a very significant Fijian collection, and they come here to do their research. And that's important to us, because what they do when they look at the specimens is they'll do what we call annotate them, or they'll put a name on it. And if they're the specialist for a certain group of plant families or genera or species, and they put their name on the specimen, we know that it's properly named. And that's important because we do use the collection for, say, plant identification. So you want to have confidence in the name of your plant specimens. We also use our collection for things like checklists, which I think Clyde could tell you more about.
You know, the museum, of course, has a storied history since 1889, basically, when it opened, of exploring the natural world. And since then, you know, it's been the go-to institution in the state for doing this kind of work. And to this day, you know, we continue to try to spread the word and take care of all of the specimens and all that. In 1992, because of all of the work we'd been doing, the state legislature declared us the Hawaii Biological Survey. To that end, we're supposed to continue to inventory all of the biota in the state and just keep records, continuous records of what is in the state, both native and non-native. And that's what we do here in Botany, for instance. We continue to keep track of everything that comes into the state. We try to make sure it's identified. If something different comes in that nobody knows, we try to get it identified, because it could be a critically invasive species that nobody knows about. Once you put the name on it, you can figure out what it does elsewhere in the world, and manage it that way. So we play a a critical role that way. In we're sort of the go-to place for having people bring specimens in so that they can have them properly identified. Then they can go and manage them after that.
The idea is we want to know what's in our backyard.
Exactly.
We've got hitchhikers. Or
we collaborate with, say, Hawaii Invasive Species Committee, HISC, and we have funding from them, and that's part of the funding for that is to maintain the checklist that Clyde makes for all the invasive species coming in. So the importance of properly identifying things, for example, would be if you're going to do some sort of biocontrol. If you got the wrong name on that species, then you're going to be barking up the wrong tree and spending money on something that may not work. So you need to be sure it's ID'd properly.
We're just kind of maintaining the collection right now, and if we need expert identification, we'll ask experts elsewhere if they can chime in and tell us what they think something is that we haven't been able to figure out ourselves.
Which we do all the time, because a botanist is only going to specialize in either a family, a genus, maybe a geographic location. So there's a whole network of scientists all over the world that we're in contact with. And it's really great these days because we're focusing on the digitization of our collections. So everything's being data entered. That's the label data. So a herbarium specimen is a pressed and dried plant record. And it's used for scientific research and historical value. And so you have collections from, say, Captain Cook's third voyage, and collections are being made all the way up to present day. So then you send these specimens out on loan, or these days with digitization, all I have to do is send a picture or a spreadsheet. And I get questions from scientists all over the world about a certain species, and I can send them a spreadsheet or a picture. And one example of the digitization is we have our type specimens, which is... they're the most important records we have. When you name a plant species, you have to publish it. And you have to pick one specimen that you describe, and that becomes the anchor to that plant name that you publish. And throughout history, all of those special records were going back to Europe when they were traveling all over the world making collections. So by digitizing these and putting the images up online, people all over the world have access to that information, because it can be really important to travel.
Now, what about storage? Because if you're continuing to maintain the collection and adding to it, there's probably a finite limit to what you can do.
Oh, there certainly is. We're not there yet. We still have room. And when I first began working here over 20 years ago, one push was to take our duplicate material and distribute it to other herbaria. And it's important when you do that, we, of course, create more room in our collection, but you're also kind of dividing those specimens up. If there's some, you know, like we have specimens in the herbarium that are burned all the way around the edges, and they were from Berlin Herbarium. In Berlin during World War II, it was bombed. So I was really excited one day when I found this specimen that was burned all the way around. Oh, my gosh, this thing's burned. And they're like, yeah, that's Berlin, World War II. It was like old news to other people. For me, it was exciting.
Yeah, because it's a bit of history.
So if you distribute those specimens and you have them in different herbaria, if they get lost in shipment or if something happens to a herbarium, thankfully that didn't happen in Brazil. The herbarium was saved. But you know that whole museum that burned down, that's a loss. You lose everything. So when you have duplicate specimens and distribute them, it's safer.
So were we able to do that in Brazil's case, or are they still recovering from that?
The herbarium was fine. It was in a different building. But we didn't know that right away. I think I didn't learn that for a couple days. It was really, that was an awful time when that happened.
It was, because I think everybody just gasped, thinking, oh my gosh, are all our treasures safe? Are we doing enough to safeguard what we've got in our file drawers?
Absolutely. And you know, we're the caretakers of these collections, and we're doing it for the state of Hawaii. We have to be really careful what we do. We do pest management all the time. You also have to manage how many people you can expose the collection to. I can't have a group of, say, 80 students walk through here on a given day because it's not safe for the collections. So you're always balancing the need to share our collections with the public and also the need to keep them safe.
And so you have this incredible collection from throughout the Pacific. You also have some specimens from Rapa Nui in this exhibit.
We do, and the Rapa Nui exhibit's up until May 5th, And the botanical specimens we have there are some canoe plants like ualla, which is sweet potato, and taro, and what's the other one, Clyde?
The wauke.
Wauke?
Although they call it something different.
Oh, but we also have an extinct tree in the exhibit, not the whole tree, a herbarium specimen, and it's called toro miro. And it's extinct in the wild. It's only now found in cultivation, but it was a really important plant in Rapa Nui. They used it for wood carving and things like that.
Because they've had challenges with erosion and all of that, that it's just kind of a history, I guess, that we're tracking as to
right.
what was lost.
It was exciting that I actually found, we have two specimens of that, you know, and I thought that was pretty exciting. I didn't know that I would actually find one in the collection.
So we had it here. It wasn't like they brought it over from Rapa Nui.
No, we had it in our collection. It was collected, don't quote me, maybe in the 1930s, something like that. We have collections spanning from Captain Cook's time to present.
And so then tell us, today we've got a tour of the garden on premises here on campus. What's that all about?
Bishop Museum got a grant from the Hawaii Tourism Authority recently. And as part of that grant, we'll be updating a specimen checklist for the flies of the Hawaiian Islands and the ferns of the Hawaiian Islands. And so going along with that, the Hawaii Tourism Authority wanted more outreach relating to those two groups. And so what we're doing is we're creating several posters that will be in our Science Adventure Center, six altogether, three of flies, three of ferns. And we'll also be publishing articles in our newsletter, Ka'elele newsletter, on flies and ferns. And another component is that we've agreed to restart a garden tour that we had been doing, but we had stopped doing. And we're going to be doing this calendar year 11 tours, one a month, starting today. And it's
basically
and basically, you know, the garden itself. If you haven't been there. It's sort of a microcosm of the plants that the Polynesians brought, what we call the canoe plants, and also a section of the strand vegetation, the plants that they would have seen along the coast, the native plants, and the dry forest vegetation that they would have come across in the uplands.
And so these gardens, have they been basically maintained throughout the years? I mean, I don't know when you last had it.
The garden was installed with federal funding in 2010, and we've been maintaining it since then with a small core of volunteers.
So prior to 2010, it wasn't?
Prior to 2010, it didn't exist. There have been other gardens that have appeared and disappeared on campus because of, you know, renovations and things, but this was the last effort to create a garden that would interact with the tourists and show the linkage between cultural specimens in the collections and the living plants that they came from. And it was also the hope of the designer. His name was Leland Miano. He's a local landscape architect. To show the visitor, and especially the locals, what you can grow in this kind of habitat. What will grow naturally that's native.
And this weekend, staff will hold two garden tours as part of the Science Discovery Day on March 17th. That happens to be St. Patty's Day, so get your green on and get out in the garden. The program will spotlight Hawaii's flies and ferns, and there'll be activities for the kids in the garden that day.